Does a commitment to science mean the death of God, the elimination of the idea of a creator? We'll speak with the best-selling author of Miracles, What They Are, Why They Happen, and How They Can Change Your Life, Eric Metaxas, on this episode of ID the Future, the podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. The book is Miracles, What They Are, Why They Happen, and How They Can Change Your Life. The author is Eric Metaxas, best-selling author of a number of works, including the biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. But this book, Miracles, has captured a lot of public imagination since Christmas because Metaxas wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal that went viral in a big way, dealing with the issue of science and God. Mr. Metaxas, thanks so much for making the time. Your column says that science is increasingly making the case for God, and yet in popular culture, we're told over and over again that science and God can't possibly mix. So what's the disconnect? What's happening?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And, you know, I didn't anticipate when I was asked to write this book about miracles, and I didn't know exactly what I was going to write about. I knew that I would tell the stories of miracles, things that had happened to me and a number of people I know, really, really amazing stories. But the first half of the book, I talk about science and miracles, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, so I just did some research and exploration, and I kind of known this for years, but I never really looked at it in depth, and it's just what you said. It's that science, more and more, seems to be pointing us to belief in God rather than away from belief in God. And the most amazing news there is that you never read about this. You would get the impression from the popular culture that science is disproving God. The more we know from science, the less reason there is to believe in God. It is precisely and ironically the opposite. Not only is science proving God, but the more time that passes, the more this is the case. The Wall Street Journal piece where I wrote about this, titled Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God, came out on Christmas Day. It is, as of today, unofficially the most popular piece in the history of the Wall Street Journal website.
Wow.
It's gotten 375,000 Facebook likes, over 6,000 comments. Now, the reason for this is that there's a hunger in America for this kind of thing, because we really never get this, as I say, from the mainstream media, this idea that science is not only compatible with faith, but if anything, it is either supporting faith claims or it is pointing us in that direction. Now, I got to be clear, science can't prove God. There are limits to science, but it can give us hints one way or the other. And what I say in the book, Miracles, in some depth, is that the more we have learned about the so-called fine-tuning of the universe, and science in the last 50 years has learned much, much more about this than we used to know, you start realizing that the odds of a planet being able to exist that could support life are overwhelmingly poor. You get the impression, again, from watching TV, any day they're going to find another planet that looks like Earth. Scientists are always rather sloppily kind of touting this. I don't know if it's so they can get funding to do more research, but the fact is, especially if you read the books of Hugh Ross and John Lennox, and most of the information I get in my Miracles book comes from them, but you start realizing that the odds against the universe existing to begin with, and then the odds against a planet existing that could support life are overwhelming. In fact, so overwhelming that you start saying, look, we're not supposed to be here. What are we doing here? How did we get here? And the common sense would lead us to think that it seems we were put here intentionally. It seems that an intelligent being has monkeyed with the physics, to use the words of Fred Hoyle, the guy who coined the term Big Bang, that it doesn't look like it's possible that it just happened. It doesn't look possible that this could have happened randomly. It doesn't seem logically possible. This is huge news, and it's the reason that my Wall Street Journal piece has gone crazy, and this week I'm happy to say my book Miracles is number 12 on the New York Times bestseller list. There's a hunger for this stuff, and you're not typically finding it in the mainstream media, so I am thrilled that we're getting a real conversation on this.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw your column on Christmas Day, and I remember reading it thinking, geez, I wish this would have come out at some other time so that it would get some attention.
Who knew, right? I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I shared it on Facebook, but I thought, oh, it's such a shame. What a waste. And then here it is, a phenomenon. But Sagan predicted, Carl Sagan predicted, that we would find all these different planets filled with life. Those have not been found. You alluded to that. What about the possibility that maybe the life on some of these other planets has already passed away, like some of the stories that we read about, that scientists are looking for evidence of past life on planets, not just life on planets?
Listen, we don't even need to talk about life on planets. We can put that conversation in the closet, forget all about it, just talk about the existence of the universe. Let's talk about that. If you look at the conditions necessary at the Big Bang for the universe to come into existence, again, we didn't know this decades ago, but we know it now, that the four fundamental forces, the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force, the electromagnetic force, and the force of gravity, these four forces were determined less than 1/1,000,000th of a second after the Big Bang, with such unbelievable precision that scientists who have looked at this have said, this doesn't seem possible. How can all of these dials be calibrated so perfectly? And we know that if they hadn't been calibrated that perfectly, then the universe, as we know it, would not exist. Stars would not have formed. If any of these values had differed by, say, one part, I quote this in the Wall Street Journal article, one part in one followed by 15 zeros. I mean, it's a number. It's an incalculably tiny, infinitesimal fraction of a fraction. If it had varied that much, the entire universe, as we know it, would not exist. And you start thinking, how come I haven't learned this in school? How come I'm not reading about this in the papers? It doesn't make sense. Well, the reason we don't hear about it is because it doesn't fit in with the secular narrative that we got here by accident, that life is just bursting. Every time you find water, you're going to find microbes. That's all nonsense, but you keep hearing that. I mean, I just saw something on MSNBC the other day that made it sound like we've got cousins across the expanse of the galaxies looking back at us. I mean, it's just absurd. The science does not point in that direction, and I think it's something we need to deal with. Even if you don't agree with the conclusions, let's look at the science and let's stop this silly speculation, because most of it is really silly, ultimately metaphysical speculation. It's got nothing to do with science when people start talking about life on other planets. It's just speculation, and let's call it that.
So those four fundamental forces that you referred to regarding the entire galaxy here, that's basically the four horsemen of the apocalypse for secularism, in that it creates at least a reasonable basis for people to believe there is a divine quality to the creation of the universe.
Well, listen, I have to say, most of the people criticizing my Wall Street Journal piece and criticizing these chapters in my book have been sort of sneeringly dismissive of the fine-tuning argument. And they just act like, oh, it's this old nonsense again. Well, let me say this. No less than Christopher Hitchens, one of the great proponents of atheistic secularism in our generation, he said, when he was asked, what is the most powerful argument from the other side? He said, hands down, unequivocally, it is the fine-tuning argument. Here's a man who could have sneeringly dismissed it and said, oh, it's a stupid argument, it's been disproved. No, he said just a few years ago, this is the most powerful argument. It knocks us back on our heels. It gives us pause. We're not sure what to make of it. And I believe most of my colleagues on the atheist side would concur. So even if that's all you hear about it, that this man, Christopher Hitchens, took this so seriously, why isn't this in the news? If he took it so seriously, why aren't we reading about this in the papers? Why do people feel the need to bat it away and say, oh, it's stupid? How could it be stupid if Christopher Hitchens, who didn't like the conclusions that we're drawing from it, he nonetheless said it's the most powerful argument? So to me, there's much more here than meets the eye, and it's really important for us to push this and to say, let's talk about the science. Let's talk about it in plain ways. Let's stop using kind of scientific arcane language to confuse people so that they say, well, I can't follow. Let's talk about it in plain language and let's understand it. That's what I try to do in my book, Miracles, because I think that, as I say, it's exciting, it's interesting, and it's certainly worth our time. We should be talking about this.
We're speaking with Eric Metaxas, a best-selling author of Bonhoeffer and his new book, also a bestseller, Miracles, amongst other things. One of the things that I noted was that when intelligent design proponents would challenge their ideas, they would be dismissed because of things like junk DNA. And people would dismiss intelligent design saying, well, look, there's junk DNA. How do you explain that? It's just random chance. And then when it turned out that junk DNA was actually not junk at all, but had uses, then they said, well, there wasn't an apology that went along with, well, it looks like these intelligent design proponents had something to offer here. So I'm guessing that they'll do the same with your argument on the fine-tuning of the universe.
Well, this is the thing, is that when people are intellectually dishonest, it's disturbing, because you realize, how can you even have a conversation with people like that? And so I think that we have to demand intellectual honesty, and we have to stop being defensive. The facts, if they are anywhere, they are on the side of believing that we did not get here by accident. I think when you start playing this out in the court of public opinion, and, you know, you take it away from the blogs and from the debates that very few people attend, but just put it out there, as I did in my book Miracles and now in the Wall Street Journal, I think people get the common sense argument. You know, it's really not that complicated. And just as Carl Sagan could put out a false narrative in his 1970s, late 70s miniseries Cosmos, that there's plenty planets out there that could support life, just as he was able to make that case on a popular level, we can make the case now on a popular level. And frankly, he was wrong, and we are right. And again, it doesn't mean that you have to have the same conclusions. You don't have to believe in the God of the Bible, but deal with the science and start to understand the odds against us being here by chance are so tiny as to be laughable. That's important to get out there.
I'm picturing some saying, well, hey, Metaxas, when we discover life on other planets, then will you admit that there is no God?
Well, that's the other thing, and the answer is of course not, because if the science is the science, it means that any life that exists probably has a creator, whether it's on other planets or on this planet. So it doesn't really have anything to do with it. Again, we're talking about the science of it, and we're understanding that for life to arise is so difficult that our brains, forget about faith, our brains should tell us based on the evidence that it probably didn't get here by accident. So, you know, whether we discover little green men, that really has nothing to do with it.
The Week wrote a rather lengthy opinion piece slamming your column in the Journal by Damon Linker. It's called Intelligent Design 2.0 Does Not Prove the Existence of God, and points to...
Well, of course it doesn't. This is the funny thing. Whoever said that it did? I never said that it proved the existence of God. So people keep saying that I say that. All I'm saying is that it leads us in that direction. It is called evidence. There's evidence. We need to look at the evidence. People can draw whatever conclusions they like, but I would never say that it proves the existence of God. No.
I have a feeling that your answer will be exactly the same to the follow-up here, because the column itself goes on to say there's big problems for Metaxas because everything he observes does not prove the God of the Bible or Jesus.
Yeah, and who cares? Whoever said that I did, this is what I find hilarious, is that people are creating these straw men and knocking them down. I never said that. I believe in the God of the Bible. I believe in Jesus, but that has nothing to do with the article in the Wall Street Journal, and it has nothing to do with the science chapters in my Miracles book. So people are, you know, they're kind of looking for trouble, I think, that they want to just shut things down. I can't make sense of why they would be unable to comprehend that I'm not saying that and then attack me for saying it.
Isn't one of the key purposes or hopes for your column to be to free people up to understand that to believe in a creator does not preclude a belief or a practice of science?
Well, see, that's the thing. A lot of people have gotten up in arms and saying that, you know, God is not a scientific hypothesis. And I say once again, did I ever say God was a scientific hypothesis? Of course not. This is called apologetics. This is called helping people use their minds to think about faith. It's no substitution for revelation. There can be no substitution from revelation, which is itself miraculous. That's the subject of my book. It comes from outside the system. It's information injected into the system of the natural world, the material world. It comes from outside. There's no substitute for that. But God calls us to worship him with our minds. So we're supposed to think about these things. These things are important, but they're not the most important thing. You know, God can speak through Balaam's ass. God does not depend on our science. But does that mean we should abandon science? Does it mean we should pretend science has nothing to say about faith, or faith has nothing to say about science? No, that's convenient for people to do, but it's really intellectually dishonest. I think that we've got to be in the conversation, and it does help people. There are many people who have dismissed faith because they've bought this idea that to have faith in the God of the Bible or to have faith in any God somehow they have to check their brains at the door. Well, I'm here to say that's absolutely not true. It's overwhelmingly untrue. Some of the smartest people in the world, some of the greatest scientists in the world have believed in God, have believed in the God of the Bible. So we need to know that. It's maybe not the most important thing, but it certainly doesn't make it unimportant, especially in a culture that so reveres science.
The book is Miracles, What They Are, Why They Happen, and How They Can Change Your Life. Eric Metaxas, another provocative work and another bestseller. Congratulations, and thanks so much for making the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of ID the Future from the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, and hope you'll consider supporting this program. To support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, go to discovery.org, click Donate at the top of the page, then click the Intelligent Design tab. Your support is greatly appreciated and what makes this program possible. This podcast is the property of the Discovery Institute. Copyright January 2015. All rights reserved.